The fact that Ecuador has been requesting the extradition of these bankers for a number of years, and that Ecuador is happy to hear the opinions of the United States on a variety of issues, but will make its own decisions.
Foreign Minister Ricardo Patiño, President Correa said giving the travel document to Edward Snowden that allowed him to leave Hong Kong was a mistake on the part of the consul in London. Does he still feel that way? And why is it that Nicaragua, Venezuela, and Bolivia have outright offered asylum, but Ecuador hasn't, which I think has surprised many since it did grant political asylum to Julian Assange?
El canciller, el presidente Correa dijo que proporcionar los documentos de viaje a Snowden para que saliera de Hong Kong fue un error. Nicaragua, Venezuela y Bolivia han ofrecido asilo a Snowden, pero Ecuador todavía no se le ha ofrecido asilo. Eso es un poco sorprendente, ya que otorgó asilo a Julian Assange. ¿Por qué está la situación así? ¿Se escuchó la pregunta, señor canciller?
Quiero saber si allá me están escuchando. Se cortó la comunicación, pero entendí.
Can you hear me? I did hear the question. The line isn't very good.
En todo caso, puedo ofrecer la respuesta.
I can answer the question.
Lo que dijo
President
es que
Correa said that it was a mistake of an official to have provided a safe conduct
a sus superiores
without
la autorización para
requesting
no ha dicho que la
his higher ops permission to do so, but he didn't say that it was a mistake to do it in and of itself. It was just a question of procedure that was mistaken.
Es fruto de una persecución política.
When
y cuando una persona tiene
a person is persecuted politically and their security is at risk, we need to
priorizar eso, salvar la vida de las personas.
Priority to saving the life of the person that's being persecuted.
Además, propiciadas, sabemos, por la CIA. En América Latina durante mucho tiempo, en Chile, en Argentina, Uruguay, personas no tenían salvoconductos, no tenían pasaporte, no tenían nada. Y sin embargo, ante la peligrosidad, tuvieron, las movilizaron para llevarla a otro país y para proteger su vida. Esto se ha hecho en todos los momentos difíciles de la historia política mundial y nosotros creemos que es una cuestión que tiene que poder solucionarse entre países que están dispuestos a proteger la vida de una persona que está siendo perseguida.
Hay soluciones que pueden ser ofrecidas por países que están dispuestos a salvar la vida de los que están siendo perseguidos.
Finally, Foreign Minister Ricardo Patiño, the latest revelation that's come from the NSA documents released by Snowden around spying on Latin America, not only on military matters, but on energy and oil matters. Your response.
Señor canciller. Sí, we're having trouble with the line. Señor canciller, otra pregunta. Sí, escuchamos su respuesta. Quisiéramos saber su opinión sobre la revelación que los Estados Unidos ha estado haciendo espionaje en asuntos relacionados a petróleo, temas militares.
I think he's having trouble hearing us, and we'll have to end the interview because we've come to the end of the hour. But we want to thank Ecuadorian Foreign Minister Ricardo Patiño for joining us from Quito, Ecuador. Our interview with Sherif Abdelkaddous, Democracy Now! Correspondent in Cairo, will conduct after this broadcast, and we'll post it at democracynow.org. Special thanks to our translator, Cassandra Smithies. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Fell, Sarah Mate, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Dina Guzder. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Donna with your WUSB concert billboard for Sunday, July 7th. Nightwork will be at the Beach Hut at Cedar Beach in Babylon. Dave Mason will be at City Winery at 8 p.m. Cheryl Pyle Trio and Nora McCarthy and Jorge Sylvester will be at the Zerzamen in Manhattan, 8 p.m. Crystal Zigarello and friends will be at the Sandcastle, Cherry Grove. Bill Sherrin will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport, 1 p.m. Jack's Waterfall will be at the Frank Melville Park in Setauket, 5:30. On your billboard for Monday, July 8th, the Mary Lamont Band will be at the Jones Beach Boardwalk Bandshell in Montauk. The Hoodoo Loungers will be at Concerts on the Green in Montauk, 6:30. On your billboard for Tuesday, July 9th, the Mandolin Experience will be at the Mejit Beach Hut, Hampton Bays. Sarah Blacker will be at the Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 1. Round Mountain, Gene Rowe, Twang Town Paramours will be at the Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 2, 7 p.m. The James Hunter Six will be at the Stephen Talkhouse in Amagansett, 7 p.m. Gene Casey and the Lone Sharks will be at Gurney's Inn in Montauk, 6 p.m.
If you hear some musician on WUSB, you'll hear where they're playing locally on Concert Billboard, arenas, bars, coffee houses, or outdoor festivals. They're all here at WUSB.FM/CBB and 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook, New York.
And you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook, 2 minutes after 6 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. Time for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
Okay, here I am. You know, just when you think everything's going to work smoothly, there's one little thing that gets in the way and basically screws up all your plans. But, yeah, we got through this. Somebody decided it would be a smart idea to hide the patch cables, and the patch cables are how we do delay, and I had to tear the station apart to find them. I did find them, and the good news is we'll be able to take phone calls because things are working. But that's later. This is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next 50 minutes or so. Checking in on world events and evolution, de-evolution, that kind of thing. It's been quite a week as far as disasters go. Wow. A lot of crazy things happening. Well, you heard about the plane crash in San Francisco, which I don't know how only two people wound up dying in that wreck. 777 from Seoul, South Korea, crash landing in San Francisco, and plane basically destroyed, but just about everybody got away except for two people, and one of whom apparently got run over by an ambulance, which is the ultimate irony. Imagine that, surviving a plane crash only to get run over by people trying to rescue you. Sometimes life is just too cruel. And there was another plane crash, though, and this is something that I'll never understand. It's how the media works. And you'd think, after all this time, I would know how the media works. I don't get it. But there was a plane crash in Alaska that killed 10 people. And nobody's talking about that. Why doesn't that count? Why is that something that's relegated to one of the back pages of the newspaper or on some other webpage or something? And I guess because it wasn't a big plane. Right? I don't want to say because it was Alaska, because we don't want to start that, you know. California is more important than Alaska. We know that's not true. But 10 people killed in a plane crash is a bigger story than two people killed in a plane crash, no matter how big the plane is. But I guess there's more of a chance that the consumer will be on the big plane than the small plane. So it's an opportunity to stir up fear and get people to buy more papers and watch more TV and read more web pages. So, yeah, there's that. And fingers are pointing as far as who's to blame for what. But, you know, all that is nothing compared to what happened to the north of New York in Quebec with that train catastrophe. I've never seen anything like this before, where basically a runaway train crashed into a town and exploded because it had multiple cars carrying crude oil. And apparently that's what can happen. Next time you see a freight train just lumbering through on its way to somewhere, look at what it's carrying and ask yourself if that can survive a collision or a derailment or something like that without causing untold catastrophe. Looking at something like 50 people killed, they say 13 with several dozen missing, so I don't think people have gone into hiding. I think the worst will be revealed. And again, finger pointing up there, they're saying, the rail company obviously is saying it's not them. The fire department is saying it's not that. Why the fire department? Well, apparently, and this is kind of weird, there was a fire on the train before the explosion. I'm not quite sure how it works. I spend a lot of time trying to figure out how freight lines work, and I can't do it. I just can't figure it out. It just seems like they're spending endless amounts of time going back and forth, switching from one system to another, and not quite sure how things get from one place to another or how long it takes. But apparently what happened here is that there was a fire on the train, and a fire department put it out. But what the train company is saying is that the fire department somehow managed to disengage the brake, which the fire department is saying is nonsense, in polite terms. They've put out fires before. on trains, and apparently they know what they're doing, according to them. But they're continuing to point fingers. We were there for the train fires, for the inspection of the train after the fact. That was up to them, said the fire chief. And the rail company executive said firefighters should have called an engineer to ensure the train was secure after the blaze. If they had actually talked to an engineer, he would have known immediately what to do about that. The rail company is based in Chicago, and they expect a very hostile reception when the poor executive is going to visit. How do you say this? Lac-Megantic? Probably saying it completely wrong. That's the village that was virtually destroyed by this train, which barreled through with a whole bunch of cars carrying crude oil and no driver. 72 tanker cars filled with crude oil came barreling down a hill. I don't know what speed it was going. Kind of curious about that, but probably pretty fast, could not stay on the rails. And maybe people didn't know this, but when crude oil tanker cars derail at high speeds, they explode. And when there's 72 of them, it takes days to get a grip on that situation. So that's a real catastrophe. That's barely getting any news coverage in this country. I know, because it's Canadian, and who cares about Canada, right? So it's weird how the media works, you know. The thing that scares you the most, because it might be you, that's what makes it to the headlines. You might be on a 777 airliner. You're not likely to be on whatever airplane they were flying in Alaska. So they're not going to cover that story, even though that's probably a lot more pertinent as far as airline safety. And even though what happened in Canada is mere miles away from here, not far at all, that's a foreign country. And it's completely different than us, even though the train came from the United States, using the same tracks and everything. It's not as big a story, even though so many more people were killed. And then, you know, you apply this overseas, and it just gets really crazy and ridiculous. You can have car bombs going off every single day in the same city in some foreign country someplace, and it doesn't even make the news. Whereas if somebody makes some sloppy attempt to detonate something anywhere in this country and fails to do so because they don't know the first thing about explosives or how to plan anything, that becomes news for weeks at a time and results in all kinds of changes to laws, to privacy, to everything, because that could affect us. We don't take in the big picture. We don't see humanity. We just see our little tiny worlds, and we mistakenly believe that's the only relevant one. And I'm just seeing this. It's just came in this very moment. I'm embarrassed to read this headline. CNN is calling it a death train. Why, CNN? Why do you need to do that? You know, you've got intelligent people there. You really do. I see Anthony Bourdain and I see George Stambolopoulos and people like that you get on the air. Intelligent people that do news analysis and then you have headlines like death train was tampered with. Okay, we know what you're talking about by the death train, but we don't need to be so tabloidish. So yeah, they're saying now, okay, Canadian authorities have found evidence that a train that crashed in Quebec was tampered with. That's according to provincial police captain Michel Forgay.
Wait a minute, really?
His last name is spelled the same way that we spell forget. Forget. That's, I guess in French that doesn't really matter, but if you had a name like that here, that would be a problem, especially if you're a police captain. Regardless, there have been many questions about the train explosion that wiped out a good part of the downtown of Lac-Megantic. And as of this evening, 35 people are still missing, 13 confirmed killed. Here we go again. This is the problem that we have with online journalism, that is. And I should put that in quotes multiple quotes, because it's really not the same thing as when you go over a news story, you check it, you make sure that it flows, it's consistent. Here what you have somebody cutting and pasting a couple of paragraphs to update a story that's continuing to run with outdated information. So while we say at the very top that they found evidence that a train that crashed in Quebec was tampered with, right after that they say investigators are trying to figure out if the train's brakes were disabled before it. So basically, which is it? They found evidence or they're not sure what happened? So basically you have the whole old story below the paragraphs that completely changed the story. Now, that would never get printed in a newspaper because there'd be a very cranky editor that would look over it and say, wait a minute, that makes no sense. But meanwhile, you see all kinds of misspellings, grammatical errors, factual errors that get spread all over the place. And it's all done in the name of speed, quickness, but not efficiency. Not efficiency at all. So, okay, that story's just gotten a bit more interesting, and I'm sure there'll be more details. And yeah, now it's the front item on CNN. So I guess when you introduce the possibility of terrorism, then all of a sudden it takes priority. All right. And that kind of trumps the George Zimmerman trial, which has been making headlines everywhere. I haven't really been following that because I just know it's going to bug me. I've seen little bits of headlines that pass through sometimes, and those are disturbing enough. For instance, the fact that it was being allowed that the jury could know that Trayvon Martin used marijuana. What does that have to do with anything? You know, if a kid uses marijuana, that means somehow it's okay for somebody to kill him at a future date. Why in the world is that relevant? And I see where this is going. Basically demonizing the victim, who by all accounts was completely innocent, by all evidence. And I'm seeing it being distorted. I'm seeing resentment expressed everywhere that this poor guy who thought he was doing the right thing by killing this kid is having to go through this, having to go through this hell. Instead, we should be thanking him for getting one more of those people off the streets. Yeah, this is the kind of mentality that we're dealing with. I just saw this. This is bizarre. The developer of the game Angry Trayvon said the app has been removed from app stores after drawing complaints that it was inappropriate and racist. Yeah, the game app featured a main character who wore a hooded sweatshirt and shared a name with Trayvon Martin, who was a 17-year-old shot and killed by a neighborhood watchman in Sanford, Florida, in February of last year. The Trayvon character in the game held a baseball bat and attacked other characters. Now, if you had an Angry Zimmerman app for phones or computers or what have you, I'll bet you'd be sued. You'd be shut down so quickly. But somehow this is something people consider as appropriate. Anyway, a small petition on change.org and a Twitter complaint campaign called attention to the app, which I just found out about today, and that prompted outrage. Critics said the app exploits the death of Trayvon Martin. They're especially offended that the developer, Trey Digital, was making money off of it. It cost $1.99 each. Martin's slaying sparked nationwide protests last year. It's come to the media forefront again with the ongoing second-degree murder trial of George Zimmerman, who says he shot Martin in self-defense. Today, there was testimony of the positioning of the victim at the time he was shot, saying that he was on top of George Zimmerman. And again, you know, how is that relevant, even if that were true? And I'm not sure if that is true. But if you're attacked by somebody and you fight back, then you deserve to die? Is that what we're learning from this? And apparently, if you're of a certain complexion, of a certain type, if you've used marijuana, a lot of people seem to think, yeah, you got it coming. Simply incredible. So, yeah, so that app is, you can't get that anymore. And, you know, I have mixed feelings about this because I think people should be allowed to be as offensive and stupid as they want to be. And if that somehow becomes popular, we need to look at why that becomes popular rather than just banning it and saying you're not allowed to do this. Now, it's being banned by certain app stores, such as Apple, and they have the right to ban whatever they want off their stores. But as far as I know, if you can figure out a way to distribute things, you can make whatever you want. And that should be allowed. But it is disgusting and hateful and horrible. And people who do that kind of thing should expect a response. Hopefully a nice, strong one. What else? The trial of Bradley Manning continues. Now, this is interesting. When Kyle and I went down there last month for the trial. And by the way, you know, we haven't gotten a single email from anybody, either at Off the Hook or Off the Wall, any of our listeners who have gone to the trial. We told you on both shows how easy it is to go there. You simply drive to Fort Meade, Maryland. I know that's hard for people who live far away, but a lot of you don't. A lot of you live in Maryland. A lot of you live in Washington, D.C. All you have to do is drive to Fort Meade, Maryland, go onto the military base. Yeah, your trunk will be opened and you'll have to present ID and you shouldn't have anything illegal in your car, but you'll be allowed onto the base and you can go to the trial and you can sit in the same room as Bradley Manning. Yes, that's not the reason you should go. The reason you should go is to show support, to show solidarity, to let the world know that people care about this. It's so important and so easy. And we have not gotten a single email from anybody who has done this as a result of hearing us talk about how easy it is. Because we had no idea. We had no idea what we were facing. And it was a chance. Driving all the way down there, maybe not even getting onto the base, maybe not even getting in. Maybe being subjected to something a lot more hostile than what we actually got. What we experienced was actually pleasant, except for the fact that we were witnessing something that was extremely unpleasant. But that's why you have to witness it. If you don't witness the unpleasant things, they get a lot more unpleasant. And yeah, it's not going to be like going to a hockey game, okay? It's not going to be that exciting. A lot of mundane, boring crap will be going on. But think of what Bradley Manning has to go through every single day. Small price to pay, and by showing up, by having as many people show up as possible, bring friends, bring relatives. It says something. And he sees that. Makes a world of difference. So I don't know how much longer the trial is going to be going on for. Probably just a couple more weeks at most. It's in the hands of the defense now. The prosecution has rested their case. But it's certainly going to be a milestone as far as how leakers are dealt with in this country. And keep in mind, it's not a civil trial. It's in the military court system, completely alien to anything that we have seen. But well worth attending. And if you want more information on the details, go to bradleymanning.org. They have a lot of information there, but I really hope we get some email, otw@2600.com. It's our email address. Really hope people go to the trial, to the court-martial, and witness this bit of history. I try to do that whenever something happens. I went to the Iran-Contra hearings, and that was easy to get into as well. Most things are easy to get into. You just have to have an interest. Anyway, this happened. We noticed this when we were on the military campus at Fort Meade. And by the way, there are two different entities at Fort Meade. The NSA is one, and the Army base is another. They're right next to each other. Don't go to the NSA unless you really want to go there for some reason. You don't even have to look at that building. The military base in Fort Meade is where the trial is taking place. But when we were on the base, we saw the WikiLeaks truck. And this is a guy who drives around with this this big truck. It says WikiLeaks top secret mobile information collection unit. But it was parked on the base. We couldn't figure out why. And this story kind of explains it. So he got pulled over. He got pulled over by the military police. It's kind of funny that it took them this long to do it. But Clark Stokely, that's the name of the guy who drives it. He was pulled over yesterday evening while driving the WikiLeaks truck. No connection, by the way, to Media Group WikiLeaks. Just has a whole big thing on the truck. And this was after a long day at Fort Meade covering whistleblower Bradley Manning's trial. Stokely is a cartoonist who has published a book about Manning's pretrial hearings. And what I'm going to read are a bunch of tweets that recounted his chat with the Fort Meade officers. And I guess we can sort of relive what he went through by reading these tweets. And it's kind of cool. This is one thing that Twitter is good for. When you are pulled over by cops and they aren't watching every move you make, you can sort of update the world on what's going on. Anyway, first thing that that was said was, I was pulled over for disseminating WikiLeaks info on Fort Meade base. And then 4 minutes later, no ticket, but they wrote a report. Then about a half hour later, the cops were freaking out about my dummy cameras. They asked to look in the back, and I said they would need a warrant for that. And then he goes on, I asked what I was being stopped for, and they said they got a report that I was disseminating top-secret WikiLeaks info. Oh, boy. I showed them my drawings as proof that I had been at the trial all day. I explained that I had been parking on base for the past month, and I can attest to that. I saw the truck. I told them that the MPs have a dog sniff my truck every morning. These guys were civilian night shift cops. In the end, we all had a good laugh. They felt stupid and a little pissed that they were called to check up on me. I played my redneck character the whole time. That really confused them more than they already were. The cop asked my social security number, address, phone number, marital status, height, weight, eye color, tattoos, birthmarks. I told him that was top secret. I unscrewed the dummy camera to prove that it was a dummy camera, and he felt like a real dummy after that. This is the spirit that people need to have to survive these times. The spirit of rebellion, but politeness. Humor, but firmness. It's extremely important. Otherwise, you'll be walked all over, and you won't stand a chance. All right, you know, our phone number, I'm going to give it out early to see if there is interest in people calling in, maybe taking some more time, because sometimes we do get lots of calls and we can't take them all. Sometimes we get nothing. It's the luck of the draw. You know, a lot of it depends on if the internet stream is working. So if that's the case, hopefully we'll get more. The phone number is 631-632-6901. 631 is the area code, 632-6901. If we see a couple of calls come in, we'll go right into delay and we can devote the rest of the show to calls. Yeah, make my life a bit easier. Don't have to reach into the back of my mind for whatever else has been going on this week. It's the start of Ramadan. Yeah. Isn't that cool that Ramadan is in the summer now? You know, it's the only roaming holiday I know of, and basically it starts earlier every year. So right now it's in July, and I remember a few years ago it was in December, and next year it'll probably be in June, and it's just going to keep moving back, and eventually it'll be back in December again. That's cool. That's variety. That makes it interesting. You know, we need to be able to do more things like that. You know, imagine if Christmas was different times of the year. I mean, yeah, Hanukkah and Yom Kippur, they're in different times, but usually around the same time. The dates vary. Easter varies. But this really varies. Moves all around the calendar. So, yeah, happy Ramadan to all our Muslim listeners. And even those who don't listen. And I don't see phones lighting up. Again, I'll give out the phone number, 631-632-6901. And if they continue not to light up, I'll continue just talking about various other things that are going on in the world, because there are so many things that are still happening. And it really does matter. It's good when people pay attention. There is a plan now to have a mission to Mars that will bring stuff back to Earth. Yeah, NASA's next Mars rover should recover rock samples for eventual return to Earth. That's according to a space agency report. And it's part of an effort to find signs of ancient life on the red planet. They keep looking for signs of life. More and more aggressively. I really hope they find something. Somewhere. And something, you know, a little bit more interesting than single-cell organisms. You know, something a bit more exciting than that. The Mars 2020 Science Definition Team report. Let me try that again. The Mars 2020 Science Definition Team report that was released today sets out the goals for NASA's next planned rover, which is set to arrive in the next decade. Had life ever been there, and did it leave a mark? Said report chairman Jack Mustard. What's with the funny names today? Forget Mustard? I've never known people with names like this. So yeah, Jack Mustard of Brown University. Of course, he had to go to Brown University. We're looking where life could have once been on Mars, like the major cities and that kind of thing. NASA now operates two rovers on Mars, which is the nuclear battery-powered Curiosity rover, launched in 2011, and the Opportunity rover, launched all the way back in 2003. And it's still going. The Mars 2020 rover would copy the Curiosity rover, but carry different instruments. One's aimed at detecting biosignatures of past life on Mars rather than chemistry tools. And instead of the heavy drill used by Curiosity, the new rover would rely on lighter coring samplers to collect 31 samples for return to Earth. Now, a still-to-be-designed rocket, and maybe listeners can help with this, because they're still working on it. A still-to-be-designed rocket would return the rover's collection of samples to Earth sometime after that. And that's when Earth gets infected by Mars plague. And this is where you heard it first. Anyway, Mars samples analyzed on Earth would be the only feasible way to determine whether rocks truly contain signs of past life on Mars. That's according to Mustard. And he should know. So, yeah, next step. Next step to Mars is to take a step back to here from Mars. It's pretty cool, though. Mars is the closest planet, isn't it? Is Venus closer? I'm not sure. I'm sorry. I don't know my geography that well. But it's our neighbor. Unless it's on the other side of the sun. But it can be very close to us, and we're finding signs of possible life. We're certainly finding signs of water on something so close. And then when you consider how many other planets there are, how many other stars there are, how many other galaxies there are, if we're finding all of this on the next-door neighbor, think about what's out there. Think about the amazing things that one day we'll find. The only obstacle, the only thing we still have to figure out is how to get to them. Because clearly there's no way to get to them using the current laws of physics and, you know, speed of light barriers and things like that. Not as humans, anyway. So there's got to be some other way. We just haven't figured it out yet. And someday we will. Okay. Are there no people out there? Really? I haven't seen the phone ring once. I'm going to give out the phone number one more time. Then I'm going to turn my head to the other side of the studio and I won't look at the phone again. All right, 631-632-6901. If there's anyone out there, give us a call. Light up those lines, and we'll go into delay and take some phone calls. Otherwise, we'll just read web pages and do various other stream of consciousness type things. I got some interesting facts here that I could share that might be of use. Might be of use to people, but we'll see if I have to resort to that. What else? Oh, this is kind of interesting. Apparently, there's a town in New Jersey that believes that the best way to solve their problems, it's called Wildwood, by the way, the best way to solve their problems is to ban saggy pants. Yeah. They're set to pass a law regulating how people dress on its boardwalk. It bans going shirtless as well as walking on the boardwalk with bare feet. You know, they really spend time thinking about these things, thinking about what's important, what matters. And this is what they came up with. The provision that's gained widespread attention is a prohibition on pants that sag more than 3 inches below the hips, exposing either skin or underwear. Apparently, Wildwood has been inundated with complaints from tourists upon whose money the popular beach town depends for its survival. What would happen if there was an influx of people with baggy pants who spent lots of money? How would they deal with that? And then they started complaining about tourists, you know, wearing their Hawaiian shirts and all that. That's what we need to do, is think creatively. Baggy pants, that's the problem. And listen to this quote from Mayor Ernest Traiano. And yes, I see those calls coming in. We'll go to delay in just a moment, but please keep your finger on the touch tone pad because I hope those calls come back when we go into delay. Here's the mayor. When you have good families, what's a good family? Someone explain that to me. What's a good family as opposed to a bad family? You have good families who call you up and say, I've been coming here 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. You know, you need to do something else, really. Wildwood, New Jersey, 40 years going there. There are other places. Lots of other places. I've been coming here 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, and I'm not going to any longer, probably because you're out of energy from all that going to Wildwood. Or maybe you're just bored. Maybe you've finally seen the light and want to do something else. But no, they say, I'm not going to go here any longer because I'm not going to subject my children or my parents or grandparents to seeing some kid walk down the boardwalk with their butt hanging out. You have to do something. I'm not one of the Fruit of the Loom underwear inspectors. I'm not one of the grapes. What does that mean? I don't want to see it. You know, I don't want to see a lot of things. But, you know, people's appearances, it's part of reality. Fashion, another unfortunate part of reality. And we just have to deal with the differences. Not one of the grapes. Still trying to figure that one out. You want a family atmosphere here, says Frank Neuger of Gloucester City, New Jersey. He's been coming to Wildwood with his wife for decades. You don't want to see someone walking around with their butt crack hanging out. On the beach is one thing, but not here on the boardwalk. It's disgusting, his wife added. I don't want to see someone's bare butt. They really have a thing with bare butts, don't they? It just looks terrible. They walk around with their legs spread and their crotches down around their knees. These people are obsessed, really. I mean, I've been on beaches and maybe I just blotted out or something. But I see all kinds of things. Sometimes terrible things. Anyway, it's according to this Newsday article, it's known popularly as sagging. And the trend originated in the, and this is some history for you kids out there. The trend originated in the U.S. prison system where inmates are not allowed to wear belts. Did you know that? Yeah, our prison system apparently has created this little fad. Inmates are not allowed to wear belts, so that's how sagging started. Write that down. It'll be on the test. And then it was popularized by hip-hop artists and embraced by youths. And the issue has cropped up, or rather drooped down, in towns across the country. Authorities in suburbs of New Orleans, Chicago, Atlanta, Detroit, Miami, Jacksonville, among those who have passed laws barring overly droopy pants. The proposed Wildwood law would set fines of $25 to $100 for a first offense, $200 for subsequent offenses, and having to do 40 hours of community service is also a possibility. Bathing, this is, it just gets